questions, raises a question. Who owns a land? Ecocide, genocide. Where is home? Ecocide, genocide. Where is home? Ecocide, genocide. Where is home? Ecocide, genocide. Where is home?
And that was Who Owns the Land from Houseless USA, a collection put together by one of our Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasters of old. It's by 15, the song Land. Before that, you heard Let It Be by Crazy Timmy, formerly Street Guy. I don't know if he's still around. I haven't seen much of him in the last couple years. And then there was a soundbite from CNN describing the panhandling ordinance passed by the Kennedy-Rotkin Council back in 1994, and that has gotten even worse since then. Voices of supervisor, then council member Neil Coonerty, the father of Ryan Coonerty, as well as Mike Rotkin, former mayor and now off the council, but who knows where he'll be in 2014. And finally, me. I was going to jail for serving free food up in San Francisco, and I got on the tape, too. There are a couple other voices, too. Anyway, welcome to Free Radio. My apologies that there has been nothing on the air. At least I didn't. The air was unseasonably quiet when I came into the studio at 5:50. And maybe it's Thanksgiving holiday folks just didn't come in and put anything on. So I'm going to try to remedy that before I leave the studio so there'll actually be something filling the airwaves when I leave. So that'll be good. Or at least it'll be. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides on 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I am your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert. I'll be with you for 2 hours. I talk about civil rights issues in Santa Cruz, lots of interviews from the street, some stories, articles, hopefully your phone calls, and that's pretty much what it is. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. Got a lot of tape to get through, and I think we probably will get through most of it since I have no guests today. Kind of curious how the Tuesday spot that Free and Coral had on their Tuesday show. They have a Tuesday evening show, and they had Bill and Danny, new potential talk show people that were on my show on Sunday for about an hour. A little skeptical of them in some respects, but, free radio is free radio. We're trying to be as accessible and open to as many people as we can, and if they can put together a show that interests folks and kick down money for the rent, which is really the kind of one of the key issues here for broadcasters, too. You have to pay a part of the rent or else we have to go, and in fact, that is one of our problems. We are essentially rent poor at the moment, and the rent is too much for us. So we're looking to gather some money before January 1st when we're going to have to either give notice or get a little wealthier than we are. If you want to help out, you can either help to find us a place which is less than our current rent. We're looking for something around $300 a month near the downtown, 24-hour access with a bathroom. I guess it's about 150 square feet. We would hope to have utilities, no parking tax, secure and dry. But if you have any suggestions, get in touch with us at freakradio.org. That's our web address, freak, F-R-E-A-K, radio.org, all one word, all small letters. And let us know. Also, if you want to kick down some cash, hey, send it our way. It's cool. We also are looking for equipment, suggestions, thoughts. New broadcasters who want to sign up and join the collective and do their own shows, that's always a possibility here if you're interested. So again, the call-in number is 427-3772. It's Thanksgiving 2012. Meals have been cut back, as most of you know, for homeless folks. There was in the past, almost for as long as I can remember, a meal at the Vets Hall. And then when the Vets Hall was unceremoniously closed by authorities who acted in a, despite findings by engineers hired by the vets, it's found there was no significant earthquake damage to the building that required closing it. But it's remained closed, and so for the last couple of years there's been meals at the Civic Auditorium, but now it's been reduced to shifts of 65 people. I think it's, what was it, five shifts of 65 people at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Not lack of meals. Homeless Lack of Services Center does provide meals. But what it does not provide, of course, is basically shelter, nor protection for those who face criminalization because they make their own shelter or seek to hide. That has been my continuing criticism of, and why I so designate what some call the Homeless Services Center, the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But you can use your own designation, call in your own thoughts. If you ate out there today and you enjoyed it, let me know. I haven't heard that the food is bad. They usually do two meals on weekdays, Monday through Friday, and in the mornings and in the afternoon. And there is now an open armory. I guess a number of bus loads go up to the armory, and the armory's capacity is 75, 100, in that range, of course, for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. That couldn't possibly serve to meet the need, but the city and the police and the security forces and the downtown association all tend to ignore that and criminalize people sleeping wherever they find them, whenever they find them, however they feel about it, on the whim of the arresting officer or the annoyed merchant or the disgruntled resident, whatever. And that's been a continual complaint of mine. So there are a couple things that have happened that I've been kind of following on the air. One is the trial of Brianna, who has been... that's the first thing I'm going to play is a bit of the original complaints I heard from her on the street, followed at some point by interviews with her after her successful, largely successful defense in court against Officer Warren and Sergeant Bush, who went after her for having her service dog with her, for not moving every hour on the hour, or just every hour. And then there's Linda LeMaster's trial and the aftermath of her trial, which is the issue is sleeping, the issue is protesting, the issue is the city's and DA's relentless harassment of not just people who are sleeping outside, but those who are supporting them by coming down with blankets, by coming down with food, by coming down to be present and witness what happens when the police or sheriffs arrive. That, I think, was Linda's function. She was particularly concerned about a sick guy, Chris Doyen there. And instead of acknowledging that and acknowledging her right to witness and be there, she was herself swept up and now faces a sentencing hearing, which isn't going to be on December 3rd, as we thought. It's been postponed, and we'll learn more about that in the days ahead. Apparently, either the attorney who took her case, Jonathan Gettleman, or probably somebody else, they're looking for someone to appeal the case because apparently there was numerous prejudicial stuff done by Judge Connolly during the trial. Evidence was admitted from the prosecution beyond the deadlines allowed. There was a general picture that the judge allowed the prosecution to paint of Linda's being some sort of a queen pin or a key person or part of a whole protest instead of the real issue, which is what did she essentially come to try to reside or lodge in a place and make it a place where she was establishing a temporary residence, which, of course, she wasn't. And that could arguably be claimed against protesters because although protesters initially and to some extent in a continued fashion would sleep there at night and then leave during the day, some chose to stay all day in order to exercise their First Amendment rights, and this was at the county building and in front of the courthouse, to protest the sleeping ban law, the city's ordinance, and the court's enforcement of it. which really was the reason for that specific locale. Robert Blind Bear Facer, 63-year-old Amish minister and TP expert who helped build the TP for Occupy Santa Cruz last year, who was essentially ticketed on the beach and for sleeping, and his case was endlessly delayed by the courts, and in response, his attorney, Ed Fry, whipped out his sleeping bag, rented a porta potty, and announced he was doing a protest in front of the county courthouse, and a lot of us joined him, at least either sleeping next to him. I was there for the first five nights, I believe, and others stayed on for 3 months until people were harassed, arrested, dispersed with spotlights and new ordinances that were passed in order to criminalize this kind of peaceful protest rather than address the issues that the protest was raising. Anyway, let's hear some of the interviews. This, I believe this first interview, I may have played a bit of it before, but I'm going to play it again. It was from the Calvary Episcopal Church, which every Monday has a meal that homeless folks come to. And that's between 5 and 7, if you are around next Monday, and it's at Lincoln and Cedar Streets, across from the Farmer's Market and the Nickelodeon Theater. You can check it out. Here's one of the interviews I did there.
Woman with a violin. Brianna Brewer. Brianna, you may be going to City Council tomorrow at 5, possibly.
I have to be at class at 6, at math class in Cabrillo at 6, otherwise I would, but
sounds like some, yeah.
I have a busy life, you know, I'm a full-time student.
What do you study?
Music.
We're out here on the corner in front of New Leaf, but you say that you've been trying to get a harasser into court?
Yeah, I have. Officer Warren from the Santa Cruz PD has been harassing me for over 3 years now, regularly, and he writes me a ticket every 3 to 6 months for nothing, really, but he makes sure he gets me, and it's on a regular basis, you know, and it's intimidation, harassment, and badgering, and it's unnecessary, and it's really just uncalled for, and I'm tired of it, and the most recent ticket I've gotten, I've told him I want to take him to court over, and this is going to be next week on the 20th of November in traffic court, since it's a minor citation, but these minor citations cost us citizens who have a hard time making our way over $350 a citation. For this court date, I'm going for over 3 citations. Minor citations, grant you, but that adds up to over $1,200 if you actually look at it and boil it down. So, ever since Officer Warren has been served the subpoena to see me in court next November 20th in traffic court at 1:30, he's been coming regularly every opportunity he has to harass me and intimidate me and make it his purpose to intimidate
me. When was the last time he did this?
Today. And he did it yesterday as well.
What happened today?
Today he came along and wrote my friend a ticket who was sitting next to us while we were playing music, and he had his he had jewelry out displayed and CDs, and he was playing Jenga on his blanket. And they said he had been there longer than an hour. And whether he may have or had not been, they just singled them out because they were right next to me.
Are you the man who got the ticket today she's talking about?
I got the ticket today because...
Your name is?
Flying Bull Feathers.
Gotcha.
I mean, it is harassment, and they... I don't know. I mean, I'm out here... the reason I'm out here is to stop it from her getting arrested, because honestly, they wanted to arrest her that day. They came back. And it's my presence out here that is stopping her from being...
Is he truly your protector?
I'm not sure, but I don't really feel... I feel uncomfortable on the streets here in Santa Cruz being harassed by police officers. It's unnecessary. I'm not committing any crimes. I'm playing music. I'm bringing art to the people. And I'm a student, a full-time student in this county. And if you look at it in that way, just from me being my name, being in the schools in this county, brings money to this county. And these police officers don't look at it that way. They don't look at me as an artist. They look at me as a degenerate, as a transient. And I'm done with this profiling.
And you say this happened not only yesterday, but the day before with Officer Warren?
Oh, yes. And on Friday evening.
So what happened yesterday? What happened yesterday? I think you said what happened yesterday. What happened the day before yesterday?
Friday evening. I think it was Friday evening. It's either Friday evening or maybe even last Friday. He's been doing this for a while now. Ever since he got served the subpoena, he's been regularly, every opportunity he has that he sees me.
What has he done?
Comes to harass me or just, you know,
what did he do?
Say stuff like, I'm looking forward to seeing you in court. I get paid overtime for that. I'm getting somewhere around $250 just to show up. Rubbing it in my face that he's making such a good way for himself being the scum of the county.
Yeah.
So I want to sing this song now with my friend, but that's how I feel.
I'll talk to you later.
And I'm actually about to go to the, let's see, I wrote a note down that some lawyer woman told me to contact the...
And that was, again, about a week and a half ago. And I played that before, but again, it's useful to know because Brianna did go to court, and we're going to be picking up on that shortly. Let's see, actually, I might be able to, I think I will roll into it directly. I was going to do a little bit more reviewing of earlier stuff, but I think... here's a few interviews which will lead up to interviews after the court hearing. The court hearing was in Department 10 in the basement of the county building, which is where infraction cases, those are sitting on the sidewalk cases, not moving every hour cases, jaywalking, sleeping ban, things of that sort, what they call minor cases, minor in the sense that in theory you can't be jailed, but in fact you can if you, for example, if you don't come to court to deal with them, or if you do it a second time within 24 hours, imagine the effrontery of actually trying to sleep twice in 24 hours. I know that's incredibly outrageous for people to try to do that. But some homeless people dare to do that. In fact, I would say most homeless people have to do that. So infraction court, but it also can serve for misdemeanors where you can get up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. And the judge, suitably enough, was Judge John Gallagher, the same judge who found Gary Johnson, Ed Fry, and others in Peace Camp 2010 guilty of lodging for essentially peaceful protesting in front of the county courthouse. And he was in an unusual posture, taking over the bench for Commissioner Kim Baskett, who apparently was on vacation. And I'll be talking more about that case as it comes up. And again, if you want to call in, if you have any thoughts, had some experiences with court yourself, please do, 427-3772, particularly in Santa Cruz, or around issues that you think are sort of poverty issues, low-income issues, or issues of injustice that concern you. Let's hear some of this, some of these interviews.
It's November 19th, 2012. It's about 6, and I'm talking with Joe. Joe, you were offended by one of our police officers?
Yes, I was.
And just what exactly offended you?
Well, I was walking through the double-decker garage right across from Cinema 9, gathering snipes because everything was wet on the outside. So I found a snipe and lit one up. Well, Officer Clark and a first alarm security officer approached me and a friend of mine, told my friend to go and requested my ID. So after that, I pulled out my Montana State ID and handed it to him. And then he sits there and says, no, I want your real ID. I was like, no, those are official state ID from Montana. You can call your supervisor and bring him down and do so. And he'll verify that, you know, those are Montana-issued IDs. And so he changed the subject, and then he asked, so what do you know about the murder down at the tracks? And then I was like, what, there was a murder down at the tracks? He goes, yeah. I was like, well, I haven't heard anything, but what's so special about this one? I mean, everybody gets murdered every day. He goes, well, never mind then. Still proceeds about how phony my Montana State ID is, and that that I should need to go get a real California ID, or I can get fined for, for fake identification. So after that, he wrote the ticket for trespassing in the double-decker garage and for smoking. And then right after, as he gave me a ticket, he goes, so why'd you do it? I was like, what, smoking in the garage? He goes, no, why'd you do it? with that little stern look, like, you know, he was hinting towards something else. And I was like, what, the murder? You're saying I did it? You know, so I told him to go F off and go where to suck it. And he proceeds on repeating, why'd you do it? Why'd you do it? Pointing me out, saying I was the one who murdered somebody down at the crux.
Did you break down in tears and ask for his forgiveness?
No, I was really irate and really offended by what he said to me.
And was the first alarm was a witness to this?
Yes, first alarm was a witness to this.
Did you notice his name by any chance?
No, I didn't. All I know is he had pretty blue eyes and he always had a smirk on his face, and I'm just like, okay.
How long did this whole thing take?
But it took about 10 minutes.
And when did it happen?
Sunday morning, around 8.
Yesterday?
Yes.
On the 18th. And which garage was it?
It was a double-decker right near Cinema 9. What used to be the Clouds, but it's now it's a Cajun restaurant.
Right across from the Clouds.
Yeah.
A Cajun restaurant that used to be the Clouds.
Yeah.
And has this ever happened to you? Any other encounters with Officer Clark in this regard? Or?
Just constant harassment there at Cal's Beach. He wrote me a ticket for jaywalking when I had the right-of-way and the light did show a person, you know, walking, you know, the walker and the hand indicator. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was lit up as, you know, the walker, so you can proceed across the street. But he wrote up a ticket for jaywalking, and, you know, just constant harassment from him on, you know, towards me and, you know, all my friends.
And when was this jaywalking ticket?
That one happened in September.
And what happened to it? It's now November. Did it get to court? Or did he just let it go?
I just let it go.
And you haven't been approached for, have you gotten a failure to pay notice or?
No, not yet.
Okay. Would you know, I mean, do you have a sufficient, do you have an address you would have been receiving it, or you wouldn't know about that?
I wouldn't have known about it at all. I'm just a mere transient, supposedly, by their standards.
You're a mere transient.
Yes.
And have you been, you're still sleeping outside?
Yes, I'm still sleeping outside.
Ticketed for sleeping at all?
Yes, constantly.
When the last time was?
This morning.
And who ticketed you?
It was Deegs.
And where was it?
Cal's Beach.
And how many of you were ticketed?
Just me.
And were you sleeping alone? Or?
Yes, I was sleeping alone.
Why is that? Where are the...
Because the cops have driven everybody away from, you know, downtown, the beach, the boardwalk, everywhere.
So you're the only victim left? That must be kind of depressing for you and even more depressing for them. I mean...
Well, I'm taking a stand. You know, being a peripheral thorn in their asses.
So how many sleeping tickets, without exaggerating, would you say you've received in the last month?
About 6 or 7.
And from the same officers or different officers?
Different officers.
And do you get told that they're giving you a legal place to go?
No.
Did they say there had been a complaint?
Yes.
So that was just the case this morning? There was a complaint?
By a worker, city worker, trying to basically pick it up trash and
the
stuff.
The snores were upsetting him?
Or? Something like that. I don't know.
you were trash and you were too big to pick up. He wanted you to move yourself?
Yeah, pretty much.
So. Anything else happen in terms that you want to bring out? Anything happen with the downtown?
And before we continue, I want to acknowledge we do have a caller. Hey there, Dangerous John from San Jose. How you doing?
All right. How are you doing?
I'm good. I know you haven't been listening to the show, but you have a report or, should we say, something to say about Black Friday, the shopping bonanza tomorrow?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I failed in my personal quest to boycott everything on Thursday and Friday this week. But I appointed a new term called Obsidian Thursday to describe the phenomenon of people buying cheap plastic crap on Thanksgiving.
What do you call it? You call it what Thursday?
Obsidian Thursday. It's a cross between obsidian, which means black, like Black Thursday, and just plain obscene.
Oh, obsidian, you mean. That's what you're saying. Obsidian,
yeah.
Thursday. Okay.
So Obsidian Thursday is what I call it. And the back of another part of it is that tonight and tomorrow at various Walmart stores around the country, there's going to be a series of community tickets and strikes. So you can get the complete database of all of these actions by going to peacemovies.com and look for the link. You can enter your zip code and find where there's going to be a protest near you. And tonight, the closest one is Mountain View. There's going to be one starting at 8. And then tomorrow at noon at 777
John,
Story Road.
John, the closest one is...
The South Bay Labor Council is going to have a protest there.
John, I don't think Mountain View is close to us. Are you set the closest
one? Well, I'm not sure if there's a Walmart in Santa Cruz or not.
No, there is. They've just put one in, and it's in the old FedEx building at Front and Laurel Streets, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, we should look on the website and see if there's a protest, see when the protest is scheduled for that one, if there is one.
Take a look.
There are a lot of them say to be determined for a time. So that means that they haven't specifically been organized yet. So I'd recommend going to ones that have a specific time listed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know when this would be, and you haven't told me, but who knows? Maybe I'll find it, or
yeah,
somebody
okay.
else will call in.
Let's click on here.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in.
Good luck with your show.
Thank you, Ben. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.
And it's Dangerous John in San Jose. I'm trying to see if there actually is any Walmart protest happening in Santa Cruz today or tomorrow. Let's see. Walmart protest. Let's see what we can find here on the air. There's an L.A. Walmart Walmart protest. What else we got here? Yeah, let's see. Well, there may be, actually. Let's see. The KSBW has something about it. Let's take a peek if the computer will actually go to the proper website. Walmart workers plan Black Friday protest. And let's see what we got here. Well, this is more New York, unfortunately, and I don't know if we actually have something here in Santa Cruz. I'll keep looking, and I'll let you know, listeners, if we can find anything. And you, too, out there, if you have some word about the Walmart protests, if there are such things in this county, please give a call, 427-3772. Now let's return to these street interviews from, I think it's... November 19th, a few days ago, at the, I think it's at the Red Church, again, a week after the previous interviews you were hearing, the previous interview by Brianna.
Performers, you've noticed, street performers, anything on Pacific Avenue?
No, I haven't. I've been pretty much, been kind of helping other people out around here, and we want to do a big sit-down and, you know, kind of do a big house meeting among, you know, my family. I mean, we all live on the streets, and, you know, we consider ourselves family. Granted, you know, we have our own little perks and hobbies and habits and whatnot, but we all go through the same thing, and it's time we need to sit, you know, gather around, sit down, and talk on what we need to do.
Well, if you want to invite... come to a Huff meeting, you can. That's on Wednesday at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
And that's at the Sub Rosa, free coffee. We've been talking with...
Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
We're talking with...
Hector.
Hector, what do you got for
us? I was just wondering how McCain considered too prematurely... To a dictator that didn't get his ships off the ground when the Earth was threatened by a passing of another planet.
This is a very cryptic statement. Are you outside yourself, Hector?
Yes, I am.
Any tassels or tickets?
I think that Steve, the attorney that's serving bagels inside...
He certainly is.
If he's still
doing what he usually does.
Yeah, he helped me out.
How did he help you?
Three of them.
He got rid of
three. One bicycle ticket that was issued wrongly, but the first one of about a dozen of them that took place in front of the Muleys here in downtown. Santa Cruz.
What kind of tickets were you getting?
A couple of homeless tickets and stuff. But he took care of them, I suppose.
And have you been ticketed in the last week?
No, but that's because I moved out of the downtown area.
So you got out of the downtown.
He got out of downtown Santa Cruz, yeah. But anyway, people, I believe people vote for a person because they want to share their power, share power with them. And that didn't happen in the last 4 years with the last ruler. And then, well, the margin by which he was successful.
You're talking about Mitt Obama or Barack Romney? Which of the two?
Is there any difference?
No, I don't think. Well, there is, but not on significant issues that concern me.
At least in the amount of by which the Bush and Obama were successful in I believe, purchasing the office.
Well, Hector, thank you, and tell me more when it comes to you.
Yeah, there's stuff that still could come, like the stuff with the sun and stuff, and we're still with our ships on the ground. Let's get our seats.
We'll get back to you on that.
And I'm going to take a brief musical break here. And again, encourage you to call in if you'd like, 427-3772. We'll continue with some of these interviews from the homeless meal, where 150 people, I actually didn't get a count, but there's often that many people, particularly toward the end of the month, or even the middle of the month, at the Red Church on Mondays. And the food's pretty good. Check it out. Father Joel Miller at the Red Church often allows me and other folks who have announcements to make to talk to folks who are sitting there eating or standing in line. And on Monday, Brianna, who you heard earlier talking about what she felt was harassment from Officer Warren in the tickets downtown, spoke to the group at my invitation, and so did I, about her upcoming hearing the next day. It didn't produce a huge crowd of people the next day, but people were informed. There was sympathy for her. And I think we at least got one or two folks to show up who might have heard the announcement there.
Okay, announcement, everybody, announcement. We have a woman here who's going to trial tomorrow for the harassment tickets that many of you are getting. Ticket for what tickets are you going to trial for?
Three minor citations, but each one is about $350, so it's stacking up to nearly $1,200 that they're trying to charge me with.
And what are you being charged with? What kind of crimes have you committed?
Stuff like possession of my dog while panhandling, quote unquote, and having my dog tethered to the bench next to me, being in one place longer than an hour that I wasn't even.
So three citations, I'm told here,
She's getting a ticket for having her dog next to her while she was spare changing. Another ticket for having her dog tied up next to her.
Actually, I wasn't spare changing. I was taking donations for henna tattoos, which is an artwork. It's an ancient tribal artwork. And actually had merely a sign. They actually charged me for displaying merchandise with an animal. You can't display merchandise with a sign that simply says henna tattoos. So merchandise is clearly an item which has a price tag on it.
So Brianna got cited, and she's going to court tomorrow in Department 10. That's the basement of the county building, Department 10, at 1:30 in the afternoon. If anybody wants to come be a witness to what's going on, that's at 1:30, Department 10, tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon. Right across the river, it is in the basement of the five-story county building.
We're asking for polite, silent, silent support, because if you say anything in court, if you're like a rowdy audience, that judgment will be used only against me. It will not support me. So if you come there and be a witness, and just a silent witness, that can help. But we're not looking for a rowdy crowd, and we can't have anybody being like that. Okay?
How many people here have gotten citations or been harassed by the police in the last 2 weeks? Raise your hands. I count at least 6 or 7 people here, 8 people. So this might be of interest for you to come and watch. Brianna is asking you keep don't throw tomatoes at the judge in the court. That's, I guess, the idea. Outside the court, who knows? Tomorrow. More announcements.
There's something cool coming up. We are actually looking into putting together a real nonprofit of our own that we could work off in the hours that we're working in our nonprofit, working off our citations. Okay? And we could be doing anything we want. It's just under the parameters of our nonprofit.
There you go. So, if you're interested in that, talk to Brianna. A lot of people have that idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also have an additional concern, and we're talking with
Blind Bullfeathers, London Laidlaw.
In London, you say the police took a special interest in you after you posted something on Facebook?
Well, it's a really long story, actually. You could call this the window licker story. You could call this, a big story. But what happened is I was trying to just protect my friend Brianna from all the harassment she's been getting from Warren and what's the other one? Clark and stuff. No, Clark. Clark's out there a lot. And so they gave me a ticket one day for being, out with a blanket longer than an hour just because I was next to Brianna. And then, she wasn't playing music at the time, so they said they weren't going to give her a ticket, but they said they wanted to. And then I think I have that recorded on audio. And then we went down, and then as soon as I get this ticket, then the lady in the kiosk in front of New Leaf, she's trying to like remove all the stuff. It's not even my stuff that I've moved and I've set out of the way. It would have been okay if I set it, I guess, in the middle of the sidewalk, but since I tried to set it out of the way and away from everyone, she had a big problem about it. And honestly, I didn't treat her as well as I should have. I didn't even know who she was at first, coming and trying to remove the stuff and stuff, and then she said I wasn't allowed to be there anymore, She said, you're not allowed to be here anymore. And so...
Not unless there's a restraining order. She can say whatever she wants.
Yeah, so I tried to come and have a civil conversation with her at the kiosk, and she picked up a telephone and said she was going to call the police on me.
Anybody can.
And that's okay, so I left. Before I left, I did put my lips on her kiosk window and left my lip marks. I figure if I can't be there, maybe my lip marks will just stay there and be okay. But that is a problem. That is an obvious problem, I guess. I did not consider the fact that
the criminal lip mark situation.
I did not consider the fact that maybe the police might try to rush me, tell me that they want to ask me if I want any felonies. They said, you must be under the influence, right? They asked me, do you want a felony? They said they called me a window licker. They they said, "You window licker." You were like, "You know you licked that window." And
this could be I think you should get a TV series.
No, but check this out. It even goes further than this. Then they said I wasn't allowed downtown. They said, "You're not allowed downtown anymore. You're done." Right? They almost wouldn't let me go get my stuff. But I managed to go get my stuff, hang out downtown.
Well, you're downtown now.
While.
Should I call the police?
I know. I guess I'm not allowed to be anywhere downtown, I guess, anymore.
Right.
So then supposedly, right, so then the next day, I think it was the next day or maybe the day after that, they saw me downtown. I had a big, the clown had made a whale, big whale balloon thing, you know, and given us the whale balloon. I was with my friends there playing music, and I'm just watching them, making sure they don't get harassed, you know. But the police sees me, and then they went straight to me. They didn't even go straight to the musicians. They went straight to me, and they said, "We thought we told you you're not allowed downtown. You're a dirty window licker. Do you want a felony? You must be under the influence." And then they made them move, playing the music.
Speaking to the mic is what you said.
Yeah, I got a little bit of this recorded. And then they said, they made them move, but then they're like, "Oh, we're 6 feet away from Brianna as she's cleaning up her stuff," you know. But they weren't 6 feet away. They were only like 4 feet away, you know. And he argued with me about how many feet he was away. I didn't even care. I said, "Fine, be 4 feet away from her, but you're not 6 feet away. You're only 4 feet away. If that's what you want to talk about, I mean, it's okay. Be 4 feet away if you want." But anyways, they still say I'm not allowed downtown. And
whatever they say. It's a question of what the law is. And if you haven't got a restraining order, you're allowed
downtown. One more thing. So I post this on Facebook, right? What's been happening to me? Because, you know, I'm concerned. I want people to know what's happening, you know?
Right.
And so then a friend of mine says, "What was their name?" So I say the officer's names on Facebook.
Right.
5 minutes later, 6 minutes later or something, I get a phone call from a 420 number. I don't pick it up. I look it up on Google. It says it's from the police department. The police department called me after I said Warren and Clark's name on Facebook.
Although it might have been a coincidence about something else.
It could have been about something.
And we will now turn over the tape and hear more of this thrilling situation, plus some other accounts that came up of interest. Here we go.
Church, talking to London Little Owl.
It was 4 days ago. 4 days ago, I got this phone call from 420-5800.
Right. But you don't have a message machine, so you don't know what they really were concerned about.
I have a message, but, you know, my message is pretty strange, and so I don't know. It doesn't surprise me they didn't leave a message, really.
They didn't leave a message. So, has anything happened since, and have you been deterred from coming downtown, or have you come downtown anyway?
I've been coming downtown reluctantly a little bit to, like, and my friends want me to come down, and but I've been kind of trying to stay away from in front of New Leaf a little bit, because the cops did come down yesterday, and there's like three of them came down there. But as soon as I saw them, I picked up my phone. I was recording music for my friends. I like that they were making CDs for their music, and I picked up my phone and I walked away, and these three officers came up and hassled my friends, and I just stayed as far away as I could from this whole scene. But, you know, I don't know.
It deterred you from being a witness, for instance.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have seen me. I don't know if they saw me, if they would have hassled me for being downtown or what.
These were the officers Clark, Warren, and Winston, or some of the other officers?
I haven't really seen Winston down here. Maybe I have. I've just now started to have to pay attention to their names, because really, I try to just, you know, not. But now they're picking on me because I hang out with Brianna, and I'm trying to protect her from all the harassment. And
her request, or are you just doing this because you want to do it?
We're just good friends. She plays music down here, and I'm helping them make CDs of her music and stuff. But, you know, it seems like a lot of these tracks end with the police breaking up the music and stuff, you know?
So, you're going to be doing that again tonight?
That's not really our plan tonight. I think we're just going to make a dinner ourselves and have dinner and have with friends and feed friends of ours and stuff.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see you tomorrow in court, and I'll report on that for Free Radio later.
Probably.
Because this will be after the court will be before this broadcast.
Yeah,
so.
Probably. I'll probably have more to tell you soon.
We've been talking with?
Flying Bull Feathers or London Laidlaw.
Thank you, London. So we're talking to a woman who's leaving town because she fears there'll be a serious reaction to
the slang of, I'm not sure what is the name of the guy who was killed in that incident.
He goes by Chief, I heard, but that was just based on what I heard in the paper.
There are actually three people in jail at least, but there's two, you know, Shay and
Jeremiah.
And Jeremiah.
He goes by Maya.
And I've heard different accounts of this whole thing, but you're concerned that there's going to be a lot of troll busting going on, attacks on homeless people, as you say, happened in Ocean Beach.
Yes, in San Diego.
How long ago was that?
A year ago.
And was there a killing that precipitated that? Or?
No, we were just hanging out, having a good time. These people came over and said that our traveling friend was hitting on this other guy's girlfriend, and there was, like, no backup for that. We all we made peace, shook hands, were like, there's going to be no trouble. Then we were all just, you know, getting drunk and having a good time on the beach, playing guitar, completely relaxed. And all of a sudden, 15 dudes, like, comes running up, and they hit me first. I was like, hey, guys, what's... And they just grabbed the back of my dress, just the biggest one. He looked like a biker. He was punching me in the face. And, I mean, we chased him off. It was 5 against 15 or so. And, you know, the 5 included me, one girl. And I'm not a fighter. None of us fight. Like, we just hang out and have a good time.
Did you use your Jedi mind tricks?
No, I did my best. I grabbed the guy who, like, punched me, and I tore him off my friend and punched him in the face, and then he ran off. And then someone tried to hit Harper with a lawn chair. He blocked it. They became terrified, and everyone ran. Weenies.
So you came up here. You've been here for how long now?
We visit Santa Cruz about 3 months out of the year. If not more, because we have a bunch of friends here who go to college. They have houses and whatnot. We always keep to ourselves. We don't hang out with the other travelers really that much. And I just want to say about Shay and Maya, though, like, I've known them for 3 years. They were the first people really I met when I came to Santa Cruz. They've always been sweet, never been in trouble for anything more than, like, sleeping outside. They are not violent people. The worst they do is argue with each other because they're boyfriend and girlfriend. I think they broke up the other day and then, like, got back together somewhere.
They were arrested the last couple days?
I just heard about it today, and everyone's talking about it today, so I'm thinking it happened last night.
Wow. Yeah. Do you want to say who you are, or is this a secret?
I'm Shiny.
You are the Shiny, of course. And you're from?
I'm from Texas, yes. I'm the one with the blue dread, so you've seen me. Me and my boyfriend look like Mad Max, so we're the ones with, you know, looking all militant like Waterworld.
But heading out of town.
Yes, we're heading out of town because, like, after that stabbing of the shopkeeper a few months back, there was a lot of anti-homeless sentiment, and so we were just like, you know, let's just leave. Came here to visit friends. It's not worth it now. And we came back, you know, all excited, and now this happens. And so I'm really concerned about how that's going to affect all the homeless people in Santa Cruz.
I think there's a lot of concern about that. Anything you want to say?
I think I've pretty much said it all. I just, like, wish people would have a fair and balanced opinion on, like, you know, I mean, we can all get along. I have to say that in Santa Cruz, it seems like it's all going downhill. I mean, I've heard more, I don't know, there's just more crime than there should be. And I don't know how to fix it, so we're just going to leave.
A couple of rocks went through the window of Mythic Games yesterday night.
What?
Yeah.
Mythic Games is, we play Magic the Gathering, like, all the time. And so if rocks went through their window, like, that would suck because those guys are awesome. They've given us free Magic cards before. They gave Harper a deal on getting some new cards that he wanted. We play outside there during the tournaments and stuff. The people in there are sweet and honorable and honest. And whoever would do that is a fucking prick.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the insurance will cover it or if there is insurance. I was talking to the owner earlier. I may look in on him tonight. There's also, of course, I guess Dale Williams was robbed as well, you know, the jewelry store.
The jewelry store was robbed.
I heard that as a secondhand
account.
The jewelry shop? The jewelry store right next to the coffee roasting company.
Because I got my, you could call it, well, I would say a love ring from my beautiful boyfriend, Harper. We purchased a silver ring at that silver shop. So I was going to say, if two places in Santa Cruz I really like have been harassed, like, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah, and I could be wrong about the Dale Williams. I'd heard that from two different people, but I haven't read about it in the paper, so I'm not quite sure what the story is. But, you know, part of this, I think, has to do with the crackdown on poor people that, you know, increases the tension in the area.
Yes.
And also decreases the social cohesion that people don't, you know, they understand if other people attack property and businesses, it becomes something, first of all, it becomes every person for themselves, and second of all, it becomes fuck the police, you know.
That's exactly right. I will have to say, like, there's been a lot of anti authority, because I guess all the camps that were raided up in the forest, like, these are men who've been living there for 15 years or something, just keep to themselves, a little bit too weird for society. They've got nice clean camps, little stoves and everything, totally self-sufficient, you know, just don't want to be bothered. And I guess they went on several raids and destroyed all the camps and took people to jail. And so I think that's really messed up, and I think that's what the homeless people are talking about, that they're being attacked. So the broken windows probably come from a frustration of the authority treating all homeless people the same, instead of, like, understanding that there's a few bad apples that are ruining the whole bunch, or ruining this.
And also, if there are lawless police officers who are citing people and harassing people for either non-existent or bogus crimes, then other people may feel they have a right to people, middle-class people who are wild and crazy and angry at homeless people, or just out to have some kicks. They feel they can do whatever they want to, whether it's against a business or against a homeless person. It increases disrespect for
it's borderline class war, kind of. That's what comes to mind. I think if class war starts anywhere, it'll be Santa Barbara. There are no middle class there. It's rich people, homeless people, and I believe, like, a small percentage of Hispanic people that might make up the middle class, but they don't talk to anybody.
And you can be reached on Facebook if you want to give your address.
Never will have it set to private. There's too many creeps out there, and, you know.
Okay. Well, there you are. This is all you get of this particular witness. And the shiny will shine on wherever she shines.
And you will rock on, good sir.
Oh,
a beautiful night to you.
Remember to hug me anytime.
And the Sentinel has been playing up the murder or killing of, and the guy's name who was killed was Charles Chief Powers, and his body was found Friday night, according to the Sentinel article, near Depot Park, and what investigators have called a homeless camp. Died of a blunt force trauma to the head from being hit with a skateboard, and rocks were thrown at him too, the deputies said. Though I'm not quite clear if that was judged by marks, their witnesses, or they just sort of are passing on what they're passing on. Jeremiah James Long, 26, is charged with murder and assault with a deadly weapon, a skateboard. He appeared in court Wednesday with four other people, Shane Zian Gonzalez, Michael Valagone Hudson, James Michael Weiland, and Tina Anderson. Doesn't mention, all were described as transients, doesn't mention what their bail was. Assumedly, it was huge. And they're charged, I guess, with conspiracy to murder. And it doesn't mention in this article what the charges were, although I think in a prior article it did. Violence, particularly between homeless people, is really a sad thing, and it happens. People get pissed off with each other for little or no reason, or sometimes for good reason, and try to resolve disputes in a violent way. I've heard numerous stories about this, second and third hand stories about how these guys who were, I guess the guy who's accused, who supposedly hit the killed the guy with a skateboard or hit him with a skateboard, was responding to either it was a self-defense or it was an act of defending a woman who would complain she was being beaten up. I don't know. I wasn't there, and I didn't speak to anybody who was actually a witness to the whole thing. It's all second and third hand, and it's all too bad. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, and also we stream, and hopefully you're getting our stream. I was having trouble getting it the other day, but if you go to the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, www.huffsantacruz.org, and click on the website address for TuneIn, you may be able to get us there. I've been in the past been quite successful. I wasn't so successful a couple of days ago, so I don't know whether there's monkey business afoot, or there's a problem with the website, or I'm just periodically incompetent, which is certainly true. But we are a streaming and we are a broadcast in both. So you're listening to, again, the Bathrop Spears Broadside Show. And you can call in if you'd like at 427-3772. Let's hear a little bit of music and we'll pick it up. Singing voice would be a nice attribute, too. That's Land with the song Food Not Bombs, or I guess you'd call it a song. It has instrumental backing. Anyway, let's hear some more interviews from, guess who it was earlier this week, and I think we're going to roll pretty quickly into post-court interviews after Brianna had won her case. And Brianna, the case that I mentioned to her, the dogs downtown, her concerns about harassment with Officer Warren, all this is described in greater detail, as well as the court proceeding, on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, if you want to check it out. I wrote about it, and so did a few other people.
And it's now November 20th, 2012. I'm headed for the basement courtroom, the infraction court of Commissioner Kim Baskett, and the case of Brianna, who has apparently got at least 3 infraction citations, at least one of which was given to her by Officer Warren. And those around her have been concerned about harassment from Officer Warren, selective ticketing in violation of the ordinance, and then simply particular ignoring of other people around her doing the same thing. I guess that's selective ticketing. And I would normally get a 980C or 980D form for personal recording, but
oh, excuse you.
Here in the corridors of the basement of the county building right outside Department 10, talking with
Maxwell Green.
Max, you're the only guy here with a suit and tie, well, at least a tie, and you're here for what?
I was charged for smoking in a non-smoking area.
And where was that area?
It was by the levee, by CVS there. Apparently, I did not realize it was a non-smoking area because there are no signs indicating that, but very clear signs in other districts nearby.
Huh. And who, which officer approached you?
Officer B. Clark.
What did the Officer Clark tell you?
Well, I'll just say that he was very aggressive and kind of misrepresented the law in a number of ways and even made a threat at me.
What was the nature? What was the nature of the threat?
He says if he sees me again, he would throw me in the drunken tank.
And he gave you a citation?
Yes.
How long ago was that?
September 25th, it was.
Good luck, and again, we've been talking with...
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Maxwell Green before court. Now we'll be hearing some interviews after the court trial. And Green was found guilty, but his fine was reduced to $20 from what could have been a $150 fine. Out of the four citations for Brianna, she was found not guilty on three because of the Americans with Disability Act exemptions, which apparently Officer Warren and Sergeant Bush are unaware of or disregarding, one of the two, or perhaps misinterpreting, let's be generous. And she was found guilty of the fourth one, that fine of $350, charged the full amount with payments over a period of time, which I take it is not going to be easy for someone who's low income like she is.
It's about 2:25. I'm in the cafeteria of the county building after a somewhat wearisome session with Judge Gallagher sitting in for Commissioner Baskett in Department 10 in the basement of the county building in Department 10. And we're talking with
Maxwell Green.
And Maxwell, you showed up all nattily dressed in white shirt and tie with a nice green cap. But you're not a local guy.
No, I'm not. I'm a Monterey resident.
And apparently you were in a park. What park were you in when you were caught smoking, medicating with marijuana?
Oh, I was by the path across the street from the CVS by the levee there on the river.
And how were there a lot of people around you, children, possibly dogs who were choking badly on the fumes?
No, there really wasn't. And I have medicated in public in Santa Cruz on multiple occasions and have never had a problem.
What happened next?
Well, the officer was attending to another matter. And I remember hearing him say something about, you know, did you hear somebody yelling in by the edge of the water?
You or to someone else?
Asked me because he heard somebody else yelling. And I told him I did not hear. And then after he was done with the issue of a young man he was talking to by the water, I said, is everybody okay? And he says, you don't think that's illegal smoking pot in front of a police officer?
Of your smoking or
yes.
Of the other?
I said, with all due respect, not necessarily. And then he says, well, wait right there. And he started getting on the radio and wanted to see my driver's license. And I told him that I had paperwork and asked if he'd like to see it too.
And what did he say?
He says, well, if it's valid.
And your response was?
Yes, and handed to him. And then he tried to play a lot of classic police psychology word games to try to get me to forfeit my rights to not be searched or seizure.
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, he'd say some very obvious yes questions, and then, can I search you? Kind of leading to that in order to try to trick you into maybe forfeiting the right to not be searched. Under the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
And I told him that I wished to remain silent, handed him my driver's license, and he tried many chit-chat questions to try to get me to forfeit my right of silence.
Another example of a chit-chat question.
Like, well, what is your weight or things that are on the driver's license? And then it... Then he kept asking multiple times if I had any warrants out or was under any kind of probation. And then also during the session there, he said that you cannot be smoking marijuana in public. That's only in the privacy of your own home. But as I said in court, that is not correct under SB 420. And also, he threatened, sent me to Drunken Tank if he ever saw me again. No, undoubtedly hoping to scare me so I'd get behind the wheel and maybe get a DUI.
So, again, we're talking with
Maxwell Green.
And Maxwell, how far did you come today to go to this court hearing?
Well, the distance between the city of Monterey, which is here, which is about an hour drive, approximately 60 miles.
And what kind of work do you do when you're not teaching police officers how to behave properly?
Well, I'm sadly an unemployed bum. I got laid off from my job, and I'm always trying to find work.
What kind of work do you do?
Well, I used to be a hotel innkeeper. I have a bachelor's degree in human communications, and I've studied journalism.
And your last job was?
At the Deer Haven Inn in Pacific Grove.
How long ago?
A year ago.
Has your home been foreclosed on yet, or do you own your home?
No, I'm lucky that I still have an apartment to rent, and I'm not on the street.
So you went before, unusually, Judge Gallagher rather than Commissioner Baskett. You wouldn't know that. Usually it's Baskett rather than Gallagher, who's actually has a pretty horrible record in his other courtroom. But you were kind of positive when you came out of court because you expected a $165 fine. You only got a $150 fine. And you said you got a smaller fine?
Yes, $25.
And what interested me was that you made a number of the same arguments you just expressed to me and to us here in the radio audience about, you know, that in fact the SB 420 bans smoking marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school or, I guess, playground. It's actually pretty broad. It has a couple of designations that it conceivably would rule out much of Santa Cruz because there's, who knows where the, I guess, a child care center 3 blocks away that might actually apply that, you know, that deals with children. Like the Calvary Episcopal, I think, has a child care center attached to it. So it's actually, the real issue is whether the Proposition 215 overrules SB 420 in that prohibition. And that, I don't know, has ever been litigated. I'm not aware of that. But
and what that means for those who are muddled at all these legal terms is SB 420 is a law passed by the state legislature to regulate the medical marijuana situation, carding and so forth, and how much you can have. But the real law that underlies all this is a citizen initiative passed, I don't know, 7 or 8 years before in 1996, maybe less, which sets down broad guidelines that allow use of medical marijuana for almost any medical ailment, physical or mental. And that really overrules anything the legislature does because it's an initiative passed by the people. Unless the legislature puts an initiative on the ballot and gets something in 215 overruled, 215 takes precedence. And it's really the most liberal medical marijuana law of any of the medical marijuana laws in any of the states at the moment, though California is lagging behind Washington and Colorado in decriminalizing marijuana for non-medical purposes, recreational purposes. That passed at the last election.
In any case, you were medicating for what was your condition? If you wish to say, you don't have to expose your disabilities, as our other defendant here well pointed out, Brianna.
Well, it's kind of personal medical confidentiality, so I just respectfully like to withhold that this time.
Okay. So, it seems interesting to me. Officer Clark has been accused by numerous people downtown of behaving, and you put it not just an aggressive way, it sounds like an abusive way in which he's imposing a lifestyle choice or his own bigoted beliefs regarding marijuana on the average citizen in spite of the law. In other words, he didn't tell you you were in violation of the marijuana law. He said you were in violation of some no-smoking law.
Well, actually, he talked about the marijuana, did not say anything about smoking, and just handed me the citation.
Oh, really?
And also, the thing I'm curious about is this, I have the citation here, this code which is meant to prevent smoking pollution and cigarette butts, 6.04.060. Is it really to prevent pollution, or is it just a loophole for bigot-minded cops to enforce their beliefs and punish other people who are legally cannabis smokers as far as the law goes?
Well, I think the no smoking law is generally intended to go after homeless people who smoke tobacco rather than cannabis. Most homeless people, even if they get a joint, can't afford to get either a doctor's recommendation or a card because it's, you know, a couple hundred bucks, or can be anyway. $100 for the recommendation.
I'm struggling to renew mine, which is a mere $50. I have a very good doctor who is kind to me and doesn't cancel my medical evaluation. He just waits for my payment.
So we're also talking with
Brianna Brewer.
And Brianna, you were also involved in a number of charges, several of them by Officer Warren. What's his first name? Do we know Officer Warren's first name? I don't want to make sure I don't.
B. Something with B.
Bob, Brent, Brett, I don't know. And then the other was Sergeant Bush, who I believe is maybe his commanding officer downtown, on the downtown beat. I know he's the...
I don't know. I have a strange thought about... See, Warren and Bush wrote me on the same day, and Warren was standing right there, yet he had just wrote me a ticket, okay? Warren had just written me a ticket.
For what?
Let's see if I can pull my paperwork out again really quick.
We're talking about one ticket in February and another series of tickets in August, is that right?
Yeah, first Warren had gotten me in February, okay, and then a
For what?
For soliciting with my dog, which is actually a service animal. And then he got me consistently another 6 months later, and he does this every 3 to 6 months. He gets me with whatever he might be able to find me, quotes, guilty with, and writes me a citation every 3 to 6 months, like clockwork, okay? This is why I'm trying to provide a case to the city of Santa Cruz that I'm being targeted, profiled, and harassed by Santa Cruz PD, as well as many other individuals. Anyway, so 8 months later, I got written... display device exceeding 1 hour and sale of merchandise with a dog is prohibited. Written both in one ticket by Warren, okay, on this date, the 8th of August, 2012. And then he had another officer with him. But instead of him writing me another ticket, he has the other officer write me this ticket. And
Sergeant Bush?
Yes, Sergeant Bush. So they both come up, and first Warren writes me a ticket for display device exceeding 1 hour and display or sale merchandise with a dog. And then he has Bush for some reason or another, writes me animal tethered downtown. Now what I'm wondering is there some sort of legal reason that Warren did this? Is he legally not allowed to write me more than one ticket in a day?
No, but it might look bad if it looked like he's going after you. That should have been a question you should have asked.
I guess it would have just made it too obvious that he's profiling.
Should have been a question you asked to Sergeant Bush. Were you in the presence of Officer Warren? Did you observe these other tickets being written?
I actually asked them both. I asked Warren straight to his face. Is there some reason you're having Bush write me this ticket instead of you?
No. On the stand. It needed to be done before the judge.
Okay.
And I should say to both of you, and this is for the audience too, most people who don't spend a lot of time around court somehow think that this is an opportunity. You know, you give your story, they give their story, and the judge decides who's right. No. It's a game in court where what you do is you have to understand the kind of the rather bizarre rules of the court situation. One of them is that, as I was telling you before, it is much easier to win a case if you can do so out of the mouth of the police officer. And you do it not by getting him to indicate he's a liar and a coward and a full of shit, but that the evidence he presents is insufficient to show you're guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. It may show you're likely guilty. It may show an ordinary person might think you're guilty, but not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. That's all you have to prove. And you don't have to say a word in your defense. All you have to do is argue, well, we've heard the officer say this, this, and this, but what are the elements of this crime? I have to be found I did this. It has to be found I did this. This element isn't proved. I'm not guilty under reasonable doubt. So that's one. That's the game you play. Most people in that courtroom don't know that. They're not big. You know, they don't want to spend their life dealing with legal bullshit. So that's one thing. Another thing is, as I was telling, again, your name is?
Maxwell Green.
Sorry, Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I was telling Maxwell that police officers are allowed to present testimony, but they're not allowed to argue or give legal opinions of any kind. So if you had an attorney with you, and I could be wrong about this, but it's my understanding, if the judge then asks the police officer what the city's position is, you or your attorney, you act as your own attorney if your attorney isn't there, say, Your Honor, I object. He should have brought the city attorney with him if he wants to, if you want a legal opinion from the city. With all due respect, this is not an appropriate question.
And the reason I mentioned this was because Judge Gallagher on numerous points asked the police officer questions of that kind. What is the city's position on this? Instead of He has a right to, I guess, ask anything he wants, but that can be objected to because it's a question that you'll need an expert witness from the city to testify, or you'll need an attorney for the other side to make argument about that. And since the city doesn't want to waste its time and money generally, sending in the city attorney, they just send in the police officer. They kind of rely on the police officer to present a report and the judge to, in essence, carry the ball for the city, except where it's glaringly in contradiction to other evidence. What I said about the standard of reasonable doubt is often more difficult to use in infraction cases because, first of all, you don't have a jury, and second of all, you have a judge who often works more closely with the police. He or she keeps seeing police officers regularly in those courts, and although, you know, it's all very nice to talk about the myth of judicial independence, the regular kind of contacts they have, I think, make it difficult for commissioners, referees, and judges to maintain real judicial independence.
So, and that might, of course, piss the judge off. But still, you know, that's your right to do it. And again, in theory, you know, since the judges are predisposed to find people guilty of smoking and guilty of being there for more than an hour, then, because that was what you were found guilty of. You were found not guilty on the dog charges because you argued that the Americans with Disabilities Act does not require you to stipulate what your disability is or to show documentation of any kind. Is that correct?
Yeah, and also that, you know, there's no classifications of a service animal being allowed to be with its said person or not. It doesn't. It only qualifies under the stipulation of, quote, private property, which is one thing, where if you have a service animal on someone's private property, they can say whether they want you to have it there or not because it's their private property. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
But they can't discriminate against you in some circumstances. If they're a public accommodation, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. If they're a public accommodation, they cannot discriminate against
you. Privately owned.
And the point is, they can't discriminate against you based on the status of your dog, based upon if he's more important or not.
Right, and it was...
It doesn't matter what your disability is.
So I was pleased to see Gallagher, who I found uniformly horrible in other cases, fined for you and saying that, and perhaps potentially for all other people with dogs downtown who claim they are service animals, that, and this is an issue, by the way, coming up on the library board. I think you may have heard about this. The library is trying to establish more restrictive conditions for service animals in the library, as well as ban sleeping, as well as ban bad odors, and extend suspension time for people. This is against homeless people mostly, and this will be coming up at a library board meeting in early December. But in your case, again, back at the court issue, Gallagher seemed to be saying that you cannot go after someone with a service animal for this absurd sitting with a dog while soliciting, even though you weren't soliciting, because soliciting means seeking money for something not of just for free,
yeah,
or for something of far less value. You were looking for exchanges, and you were doing what's called displaying merchandise in a non-commercial display, which is legal, provided you are in the very restrictive set of locations, which they didn't claim you weren't. Also, the issue of the pet issue may have actually had a significant impact, and I say this because it looked to me like Clark had some bad feeling at the end of that situation because his response...
Oh, no, Bush.
I'm sorry. It was Bush. Correct. Clark didn't say much at all. And Clark was the guy who testified against you.
Yeah, we had Warren and Bush on this.
Warren and Bush, sorry. Correct. Yeah, Bush, the sergeant, did say that he found it suspicious that you did not bring your pet with you into court. And I'm going to go off record here for a minute.
So, brought him in with me. It just wasn't going to work today.
What Sergeant Bush said, you know, why didn't you bring your animal with you? It's very suspicious. And, of course, he was ignoring the ruling of the judge and the Americans with Disabilities Act that shows he felt that somehow he was right to enforce his opinion above the law.
And he's not a doctor.
In spite of whether he's a doctor or not. A doctor cannot give, you know, a doctor might think you're faking it, but if your doctor thinks you're not faking it, or if you get, you know, authorization for a service animal, you do. Have a seat, Brian. So, you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I'd just like to say that in the courtroom, that the officer looked very rewardingly butthurt at the end.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, I think Baskett would have found against you on most of these counts.
Yes,
I don't know why.
Everyone, I think.
I don't know why Gallagher is. Maybe it's because he saw me and Brent or others in the courtroom supporting you. Maybe he seemed. I don't think Gallagher has done this very much. He doesn't show up in infraction court. He's mostly a misdemeanor judge.
I was surprised by some of his. He seemed to like smirk a little bit at some of my Gallagher. He seemed to smirk a little bit at some of my questions for him, and I think it kind of slightly impressed him how I questioned him and the comments that I had for court. And that's kind of the reason that he probably gave me not as much of a hard time.
Yeah, for those who, I was wincing at your questions because it's my feeling that you do not, what you were doing is you were giving testimony as you questioned, and you generally, as I say, if you want to use the legal approach, not do that. You want the officer to say everything he's going to say. You cross-examine him, maybe just, you know, to suggest, to, you don't say, you know, you don't tell him, isn't it true that, blah, blah, blah. You say, well, what happened here? And then what happened next? And then what happened? And what did you say at this point? Do you remember saying anything else? It's something you've got to practice, and I suggest this to people who go to court with these tickets. You have to practice this before you get into court. Most people just, you know, they give their testimony and they leave.
Oh, yeah, I was winging it. I'm amazed at the results I got from winging it so much.
Right. And you may have established a precedent on the streets for disabled people with dogs. I think that's a really important thing. And unfortunately, you may have established a precedent for going after people medicating in public, even though it is legal to do so in theory, although that SB 421 1,000-foot rule may exclude all of Santa Cruz, as far as I know. Brand has a thought.
Proposition K could have been cited. Maybe you didn't know about that. It's Proposition K, you may remember, that the police department was ordered by a proposition that passed to make marijuana crime their lowest priority.
Okay,
when doing when anything else.
A marijuana crime, it was a smoking crime in a non-smoking area.
Also, this does not have to do with that has to do with, first of all, being in private and between consenting adults. It doesn't have to do with being in public. I wish it were. In Berkeley, in 1979, when it was passed, actually I think it was passed before that, it was called lowest enforcement priority. It was, I think, citywide. But this is only indoors, and it is, of course, it has also been not routinely ignored, but significantly ignored by the police. I've seen it, because the Measure K Commission is not active at all. In fact, they don't even meet. You know, they get together, they get there, and they adjourn before they meet because they don't have a quorum. The people who've appointed them have appointed people who don't give a shit, or they're too busy, or.
And Measure K is a city initiative which was passed by the voters and put on the ballot by voters, which makes any marijuana use by adults over 21 between consenting adults on private property, the lowest enforcement priority of the Santa Cruz Police Department. And so actually it's not, you don't even have to be indoors. You just have to be on private property, I believe. However, the levy isn't private property. It's public property, so Measure K wouldn't apply. Unfortunately, even though it theoretically does apply to large swaths of Santa Cruz, particularly in private residences, police, when they've violated it, have no real accountability, though the accountability is supposed to be the Measure K Commission appointed by the City Council. I think that hasn't met in a couple of years. They show up every 6 months and don't have a quorum. It's a strange little weird charade they do. You're listening to some discussion after the largely successful defense by Brianna Brewer of her being on Pacific Avenue with her service dog. I think she was selling henna tattoos or giving them away for donation or providing them as a service. I wasn't entirely clear on that. She's also a musician and a student at Cabrillo College, by her account. And she also reports, as do others, repeated harassment and focus from Officer Warren and his superior, apparently. Sergeant Bush also has been involved in this. It looks like they're trying to hammer down critics that they have taken umbrage against, or just people. Now they just feel they can go after particular people if her perception is correct. That seems to be what the accounts are saying. And indeed, Sergeant Bush seemed to be rather taking things rather personally in court. He's a rather mellow fellow. I've chatted with him at the city council, where he's often the sergeant at arms, and we sort of stand in the back of the room and exchange grimaces at each other over the council's latest antics. But he doesn't grimace. He just sort of nods and so forth. I'm the one who does the grimacing. But he doesn't seem very, he's very matter-of-fact, very mellow, rather amiable. But in the court, when it was, in essence, his authoritarian, you have to do this, that, and the other with dogs, even though that violates the Americans with Disability Act, you have to show us your documentation, you have to tell us your disability, you have to present particular documentation. The only way you can be here is with a, if you're blind or sight challenged or whatever. That was, I think, what Officer Warren may have said. It's simply not true, as far as I understand it. And the judge paused to actually read the Americans with Disability Act, the ADA, or the city code section, and afterward he found Brianna not guilty on three counts. I've never seen a judge take so much time reading the codes. He may have thought it was very important, but he had us all sitting there waiting for 10 minutes while he did some reading, which I might have complained about, except that he used the time to provide some justice for Brianna, and essentially a slap in the chops for these three cops, or these two cops, on these three charges. And that means that people with service animals downtown, well, they may get a different treatment, unfortunately, from Kim Baskett, the normal commissioner at that court. But it is, and it isn't really a precedent because it's not a written decision, I don't think. But it's still a decision, and it can be referred to by people who are trying to defend themselves. I guess I can also refer back to the Americans with Disability Act itself, which I'm not terribly familiar with. I just heard secondhand information. I think I looked at it once or twice. But I haven't been keeping up with it, what the latest is with it, what the court decisions are, what the act itself says. So I don't have a lot of woof-woof knowledge of that particular act. But let's hear some more. And again, it's an encouraging sign from, first of all, that people are willing to stand up for themselves, and second of all, that for whatever reason, a judge is finding that, in fact, police officers are overstepping their bounds, which we need to have a lot more findings in that regard.
Yeah, I've got other concerns.
Did you want to touch on the other thing about
Brent Adams.
Denise Miller, who is a downtown host, being used as a citizen complainant when she's, I know she's not in the capacity of a citizen, a resident, or a business person. She's working for the city, as a complainant.
For a private party.
It seems like hosts shouldn't be able to sign complaints, citizen complaints.
Downtown Association is a private party, so therefore she's not even hired by the city. I don't really understand how someone hired.
I think the DTA may get some money from the city for it, but and she's a citizen, but she is, if she's doing so in her capacity as a host, she's allowed to do that. You know, she can do that. It, to me, it just shows that the hosts are a bunch of snitches and they're used for backup for the police in these situations.
These laws are there to protect the residents, other citizens, and business owners. If you don't have a complaint by an actual citizen, she's able to pick and choose who she's, selectively enforce these laws. And I'd like us to go to the city council and argue this problem.
Yeah, sure. But in fact, anybody can file a complaint, including a cop. And in reasonably disturbing noise law, the police have adopted a policy that states they will not file complaints. But in fact, that's not in the code. The code says anybody can file a complaint, a cop, a host. And so you can do it. The fact that they adopt a policy, is actually, it's neither here nor there. I suppose you can complain to the police chief that you're violating your own policy here, in which case the cop may be reprimanded, but you'll still get, a citation and so forth if they choose to do it.
To maybe see a policy of the, with the Street Performers Guild, it would be good for us to work with the DTA, Downtown Association, have them come up with a statement that they're in support of street performers. They're not trying to pick and choose what quality, or that Denise Miller has a personal issue all of a sudden and should see this woman in court when she's actually on the job trying to keep the peace instead of it shouldn't be any of her business quality or different aspects of street performing. If they're definitely breaking the law, she can warn them, but to be a complainant seems.
Well, of course, see, what the hosts are for, from my perspective, is to frighten away people from doing anything that they, the police, or a complainant don't want them to do. And this can be something that is in violation of their tangled set of downtown ordinances that can cover almost anything, or it could be something outside those ordinances that they're claiming the ordinances cover anyway. So, for instance, one of the claim of the host, what was her name, Denise Miller, was that you said you'd been there for 15 minutes and they came back and gave you a ticket. Did they come back for 15 minutes and say, we want you to leave, or did they come back and say,
right? Stated that I'd been there longer than an hour. Okay. And I said, so you say I've been in this spot longer than 1 hour when I've moved to this spot 15 minutes ago. And they said, yes, you have.
And see, now what you want to do for those in the future are arguing such things as you say, you should ask the cop, although this could be a dangerous question, how do you know it was an hour? You know, at what time was it you came by? And what were you doing when you walked?
Actually, I do that actually with Warren now, because he makes a point every time he sees me. And actually, I didn't bring this up in court either at all, and I really badly wanted to. But I meant to make a statement just generally of the fact that I've been intimidated and harassed by Warren leading up to this court date extremely consistently ever since he got subpoenaed. Approximately a week after I requested the court date, he received a subpoena. And the only way that I know this is because I know that he had to be subpoenaed to come to court. The judge told me that he would be subpoenaed to come to court. And approximately a week after...
I think you're wrong. You see, actually, the unless... Well, it depends. In almost every case, when a police officer files a charge like this, and then the defendant requests a trial, as you did, the officer has the option to appear in court or not. Now, it may be in a special situation that you...
I remember Basket asking me if I would like to subpoena the witnesses, and I said yes. And so
that's interesting.
Warren received a subpoena, and I believe Denise did too. Maybe, or maybe not. Maybe she got involved personally, but... I have no way of knowing that now, but I do know that approximately 3 weeks ago, leading up to this court date, I heard nothing from Warren before that at all. Since August the 8th, when he wrote me that ticket, I had never seen him on the street since August until 3 weeks ago when I filed this court date. And ever since he knew he was going to see me in court for this, he's been harassing me every opportunity he sees me.
The last time that happened was when?
And it's a couple days ago. It's almost every day he sees me downtown.
And has that deterred you from going downtown?
I don't like to say it does, but it does in ways.
So, for example, did you go downtown last night?
I didn't last night. I wanted to prepare for my case more, but I did, you know, over the weekend here and there.
Okay.
I'll probably go down tonight to celebrate.
Mm-hmm. So that means if you got your doggie with you, and what kind of a doggie are we talking about?
He's a pureblood pedigree Springer Spaniel.
His name is?
Jack Jones.
And will Jack be visiting the mall again?
He will, but I like to keep him away from the mall because, you know, the wintertime he gets cold. And I've got tired of getting harassed. I was waiting to see some justice and see some legality in this situation before I brought my dog down there any further. I actually had Warren threatening that he could take my dog away if he wrote me 3 different citations for the same offense of having a dog while, quote, soliciting. He said he could legally take my dog.
I don't know if that's true or not. You should check the law library around the corner.
I haven't looked it up, but I'm very skeptical of that.
I would say, you know, you might want to document every time Warren makes a threat like this.
I've had my friends start recording when they come up and talk to us.
That's good. You would document it by writing, essentially, every time Warren gives you a threat, you write a brief note to the police department filing a formal complaint about Warren, suggesting that this is a form of harassment. If you can, what you really can do is try to find the general orders of the police department, because often what Warren may be doing is not against the law, unless you can show, you know, all kinds of elaborate pattern of harassment and motivation, which will cost you thousands of dollars and attorneys and all kinds of everything else. But if you show that he's violating a policy of the police department, not the law, but the police department, which is online, I posted those general, they're called the general orders of the police department. You can find them on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, where I think I posted a notice of your case coming up today. I don't know if you've read it.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's good. And so I would encourage you also to write up an account of what happened today in court. I may try to do that too. Getting real tired of the parking meter guy rolling through the hallway there, but that's another story.
He is really fast.
He zooms right ahead. The thing that I was going to say to you is, If you had asked Officer Warren or the host, so I want you to tell me everything you remember about what you said to me. And see, what they have to say in order for the law to apply is they have to say, not only do they say, you can only be here for an hour before, or you can only be here for an hour, 45 minutes later. They have to come up an hour later, and they have to say, at that time, you cannot continue to be here, you have to leave. Now, it was ambiguous. You didn't bring out whether that was said or not, because it might have been said, and they can lie about the time, but they have to say that. And of course, what police have been doing more recently, I understand, is they've been telling people, it's up to you to figure out when an hour's up. We'll come by, and if you're still here, we'll give you a citation. That's not what the law says. The law says, after an hour, after being warned after an hour, doesn't mean warned that the law exists, doesn't mean warned an hour before, it means warned at the time that the hour has passed, then you must leave, and if you don't, you can get a citation. It's bullshit. You should be able to stay. We challenged it in 2003, and we won for a while until they changed the law.
I especially believe if there's no one else out, and you're not taking up a position that's crowding the street to where other people can't perform, then you shouldn't have to move at all. If you're the only person on the mall besides one other person way down the way...
And there's the sleeping ban on the bombing of Afghanistan. We go into everything else that's full of shit, and the marijuana laws. The fact is, they all suck. But the question is, how do you beat them? You see, that's what you got to figure. And more important, how do you ignore them effectively so you continue to live your life?
God, the only thing I can think of is to actually just change my entire approach as being an artist and a musician, which I don't want to do.
No, don't do that.
And actually just take it by the bullet and become a lawyer like my mother was doing before she passed. She was kicking ass.
The best lawyers. We still got war crimes every day going on. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, we're talking about my tie and attire, but I'd just like to say your name is...
Bree.
Brianna is dressed very lovely today. She's wearing a beautiful silk dress and earrings and some high heel shoes.
Yeah, fancy Dan. I know your kind. You guys with a tie and you with your dress. Just because I got old lousy jeans on.
And Bruce doesn't have his bathrobe, I'm afraid.
Well, it's Robert, but yes.
I don't know. I see this whole situation as a war of classism, and so I knew that I had to present a certain air going in there to get any sort of seriousness from the judge at all.
Nice earrings, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, I anything else the two of you want to say before we get you a cup of coffee?
Just the selective enforcement and the Nazi protocol of Santa Cruz County has to stop.
Of course, it was the city officers who did this, so let's not blame the poor sheriffs.
Okay. The city of Santa Cruz Police Department.
There you go. And not to mention the hosts of the downtown.
And their lax policies.
Are there lackeys who are doing...
And definitely the hospitality, but not all of the hospitality agents. There are definitely some of the hospitality agents who know how to do their job right. And I think that some of them need to take some lessons from a particular... He's the older man who used to be the sheriff of Watsonville. I forget his name, but he's probably the only polite hospitality agent I've ever encountered downtown.
Well, it's very nice when they're very polite as they take away your liberties, but that's another story.
Actually, he never bothers me. He never, ever harasses me about anything.
He probably bothers other people.
Even if I host him breaking the ordinance.
These hosts are designed to bother everybody who engages in normal behavior downtown, but that crosses the downtown ordinances, which have absolutely no meaning whatsoever other than to privatize the sidewalks for the merchants.
Interesting. So that's a new definition of hospitality from what I heard. I mean, certainly...
Hospitality.
Yes. Very much different than what I practiced when I worked in the hotel business. Mm-hmm. And for my day in court, I'd have to say that I'm sure my performance was quite far from a professional lawyer and probably some things I might have done better, but I did the best I could,
sure.
I hope I learned from my mistakes.
We've been talking with...
Maxwell Green.
And...
Brianna Brewer.
Thank you both. Okay, we're talking with another defendant in the infraction court of, I guess it was Judge Gallagher today. What's your name?
My name's Kathleen Sample Morris.
And Kathleen, you local or out of town?
No, out of town, San Francisco.
Wow, so you came all the way for this crap?
Yeah, I did. I thought I had a case. I thought I could win.
And so what happened?
Long story short, we were at Sunset State Beach for my son's 7th birthday party with family. I called the Friday before to ask if it was okay to have alcohol at the tables at the day use area. And they said, it's fine to have beer and wine at the tables, but not on the beach. Mm-hmm. So we had some beer and wine with us. An officer came by that day asked if I had any alcohol. I said, yeah. I showed her a bottle of wine, and she gave me a citation.
And name of the officer?
Bailey.
State Parks officer?
State Parks officer. And I said, wait a minute. I was told by an employee in the entrance booth that it's okay to have alcohol here, just not on the beach, and we've complied with that. And she said, oh, no, 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 no. There's signs all over here. I've been giving citations all up and down here all day today. And I said, maybe because they're telling people it's okay to have beer and wine here. Maybe that's why so many people are getting cited.
Well, it's a nice fundraising activity.
It felt like entrapment. It did. And I thought, wait a minute, Sunset State Beach cannot have it both ways. We love this place. We pay our fines. We pay our fees. We camp here. We support the parks. I want to support the parks, but I can't be told it's okay to have alcohol at the tables and then be given a $280 ticket for it. So I thought, look, I have my cell phone records from the calls that I made, and I also had an email that I had sent to the extended family right after I got off the phone with the person at Sunset State Beach saying, oh, I got confirmation. It's fine to have alcohol at the tables, just not on the beach. So those things helped me win.
You brought them into court.
I sure did.
And what statement did the State Parks officer make?
She said that I was guilty because there were signs posted right where we were. And I said, well, I thought those signs meant that was for the beach based on what the person in the entry booth had told me. I thought that pertained to alcohol on the beach. And I said, you know, the other thing is the dais area, these tables are right next to where you park, and then there's this big mountain of sand separating you from the beach. So I thought that meant we weren't actually on the beach.
Clarity given as to what this warning was from the, or I should say, what this reassurance was from the woman at, or the person who was at the, the entranceway. What did you get any indication of? Were they just simply mistaken? Was there a new policy? Were they right, and the patrolling officer was mistaken?
The judge basically said we have a responsibility to tell the public the right information, and it sounds like the person working in the booth, the state park employee, gave you the wrong information.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Guilty, guilty, guilty.
Right. So he said I was guilty, but he said your fine is zero based on all of this that you've said and done. You don't have to pay.
So you're a criminal, but he's letting you off.
Right.
You're just the kind of person we don't want to see around here, madam. So how much?
$280.
Yeah, but you did have to come all the way down from San Francisco, I imagine twice or just only
yes,
one?
One time.
You didn't come down for the arraignment?
I paid. So I paid the $280. And
as a bail before,
right.
When you
I
got the citation?
Once. Yeah, so I only had to come once.
And then did you lose a day of work for this?
Yeah.
What kind of work do you do?
I work in public health research. On a heart health study.
This is all to keep you healthy, you see.
Yeah, that's right. Alcohol in moderation is really, it's actually a very healthy
thing.
When
sand gets in your alcohol, it can be very questionable.
Not so fun, yeah. I'm just glad I'm getting the money back. That was my goal. I don't really care about the guilty thing. It's, I don't know.
You look so guilty. I don't know what to tell you.
I look like a soccer mom, don't I?
You have a nice looking scarf. You look like a sort of a relaxed person who's a little tired of the whole thing and wants to go home.
I do, yes. I love Santa Cruz, though, and we'll be back. We're here a lot.
And again, we've been talking with
Kathleen Sample Morris.
Thanks, Kathleen. Here's the radio show in which it appears. It'll be archived in case you don't catch it, probably on Thursday night.
I don't know.
So we have an account from Kathleen here about another incident in Judge Gallagher's court where apparently the individual was found guilty in a Big Basin State Park incident for being the third vehicle in a campsite intended only for two vehicles. But even though that was against the law, apparently there was something that had Gallagher reduce the fine to zero. What do you remember about that?
I remember, the defendant had been given a warning the evening before, like 45 minutes after he had arrived at the campsite by this officer. And the officer had told him, you need to go register and pay like your vehicle fee. And so he gave the officer money, gave the officer cash. I think he said it was either $20 or $40. And the officer gave him this little thing to stick on his window.
This is the same officer he paid who had warned him.
Yeah. And then the officer said, well, I'll be back in 45 minutes with the paperwork you need or whatever that is. And he never came back. So this defendant went over to the park information desk or entry booth and said, okay, I'm waiting for this guy to come back with paperwork. Have you seen him? And they said, no, we haven't seen him. We don't know where he is. And he just never came back. And so The defendant moved his car. He put the little thing the guy gave him in his window, moved his car to the overflow area that night. And then the next evening, the officer came back and saw this guy's car in the parked in the campsite parking area, and there were two other cars there in addition to his car, and he gave him a citation. And
was that because he hadn't paid for the next night, or because?
No, it was because the third car was not supposed to be parked in that area.
And what did that have to do with the fact that he had the day before not returned with the paperwork? Is that relevant at all?
It seems relevant to me, but
and apparently it did to the judge because he reduced the fine.
Yeah.
What was the comment of the officer who did not return with the paperwork?
What did he say? I don't remember what he said. I don't remember what he said about it. It was kind of mentioned at the end, but I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Did you have an oh moment there?
The officer at one point said the standard procedure was to write extra vehicle on the little receipt thing, but this guy had never received that. Extra vehicle.
Did he acknowledge that he'd actually gotten the sticker cane from him, and he had gotten the money, but for some reason he didn't get back with the paper?
I don't know. I don't think he did. I don't remember him acknowledging that.
Did he deny it?
No, he didn't deny it.
Perhaps he had a bad memory. I am not a crook, and I do not remember.
And it's... it will remain a mystery what happened there. My apologies for all the elaborate stuff. We should have probably cut that out, but let's see what happens next.
But it's worth it. I think.
Any reaction to the no smoking case with the guy with the bald-headed fellow, and then the other case of the woman with the many tickets for a doggy?
I thought that the guy with the smoking citation, it seemed like he really should not have had a citation given to him. The woman with the dog, it's hard to tell. I mean, it sounds like she sort of has these repeat issues with some of the officers, so it sounds like there's a relationship there that I'm not privy to. I just don't know. Like, they know each other. It's kind of an ongoing thing, it seems like. I don't know. Who knows what's
right?
Who knows
what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
In fact, of course, it's interesting. I detect a possible class bias on this woman Kathleen's perception of Brianna's tickets. Brianna, although she was very snappily dressed, spoke in a colloquial kind of street fashion, I think, to the court and to the and was quite passionate in denouncing the officer and just suggesting that harassment had happened. And, you know, the Kathleen, I think, perceived, this is this other woman we're just talking to, perceived that there was something going on between the officer and the woman. The question, though, is whether it was provoked by the officer and was an example of abuse of authority, or whether it had to do with some prior criminal behavior by Brianna, which is, I think, the veiled suggestion that's coming through here, which, as far as I know, isn't the case and isn't an issue at all. But instead of coming to the conclusion that an officer can be abusing his authority, people, I think, are prone to come to the conclusion that individuals who have problems with officers are problem people, and that's an unfortunate conclusion to come to. Particularly since I think in many cases it's not true.
Yeah.
Or women.
Exactly.
And again, we have been speaking with
Kathleen Sample Morris.
Thank you, Kathleen. It is November 21st, 2012, a sunny Wednesday. It was very rainy a moment ago, it seems like. I'm here at the Bike Church, right outside the Bike Church, talking with
Steve Schnarr.
And Steve, you and I, of course, have talked a lot about the Bike Dojo SCPD connection, the Hillary Bryant, vice mayor, likely to be mayor connection, and the whole issue of the bikes being stopped coming to the Bike Church, or now having to be rerouted through a bizarre Watsonville connection. Can you summarize that very briefly, where we're at with that?
The old bicycle distribution that we hosted and invited all the groups disappeared. Later it surfaced that they were giving them to a for-profit business that has...
The police department was.
The police department.
And it should be clarified that the... I've talked about this on the air before, so for those who know, forgive me. The police department has in the past, after some pressuring from nonprofit groups and the bike church, given the abandoned bikes they have to the bike church to distribute to nonprofits and to fix up themselves. That was abandoned 6 months ago, 8 months ago, without any notice and without even advising the bike church that this was happening, by either an internal decision of the police department or a police department consulting with city council or consulting with Vice Mayor Hillary Bryant. It's not entirely clear what went down there because we can't get the emails. Bryant has secreted away the emails that we had thought that should be public record since she's the vice mayor. And I've repeatedly asked her to make those emails available, as has Steve Schnarr, who we're listening to an interview of. Let's hear more from Steve.
And called the Bike Dojo, which has a youth program, which is not a registered nonprofit, and they were not inviting all the other groups in town.
As had previously been the case with the bike church.
For many years, it was the program. We were just helping facilitate a program that was the city's program, not our program.
Just to give away bikes that are not usable, the police department would otherwise have to store.
Exactly, or get rid of. And they were giving, instead of, or they used to auction the better ones. A lot of them aren't really worthy of it, but they were giving them to youth through various organizations. And, we only got a few of them because it turned out the Bike Dojo wasn't distributing very many of them, and they were selling some of them, but they still had hundreds of them piled in a warehouse, and then they had to move, so they gave a bunch to the Bike Shack, which is our friends, a group we helped to start and have supported in Watsonville, and they invited us to get some, but that was a few months ago yet.
And that's kind of where we were, although you had actually then sent some emails to Hillary Bryant to ask, you know, what the story is, and actually to look at some of her earlier emails, since the news you were getting from Tricia, what is it, Trina, who's the assistant city manager?
Tina.
Tina Shule was not exactly informative for you about the whole history of this, as I understand it. Hillary Bryant initially had emails to show you, but then on advice of city attorney, suddenly withheld everything, and she hasn't responded to mine, because apparently she may be throwing her emails into a private account, which I've requested information on every email she sent since the beginning of this year. I haven't yet heard from the city on this.
Yeah, well, there hasn't been any progress on that, and it's still unclear. It's possible that the police really were the main motivators, and she had a tangential role, but since she's not sharing her emails, it's hard to know. But that, in any case, yeah, I did finally...
She has a primary role in concealing her emails, which I think is an even bigger issue in a certain sense than this bike issue.
I think transparency in government is very important, so I find that concerning. We did, after we asked politely through various channels for months and didn't get anything, and then we...
What did you ask for?
Information, what's going on, you know.
Why are you not getting the bikes?
Yeah, are they getting sold, this and that, and no one was really giving... We were getting the runaround, and...
There's some connection between the Bike Dojo and Hillary Bryant's partner.
Yeah, her husband has a pedicab business that is publicly promoted as working in conjunction with the Bike Dojo, and so we sent out a controversial email press release about it, and then still we didn't get much response from the city except...
Controversial in the sense that it provoked hostility from Hillary Bryant and her fans and those who wanted to cater to her?
Yeah, it was kind of a charged thing, and so, you know...
What did you charge? What did the email charge?
That there was, I think we used the phrase, secret backroom deal that the police and Hillary Bryant changing the program to profit their friends.
You said this without proof. You said this without the documentation. Is that correct?
Well, it's, you know, we had some documentation.
Circumstantial evidence?
Yeah, there was, I think, probably our wording was a little too strong for the exact documentation we had. But in any case,
she denied there's such a deal?
You want me to update?
Let
me talk for a second, Robert. So we finally... only after it came out, even then, the city's response through Don Lane was kind of further obfuscate the issue and say, oh, we didn't do everything right, but we're not going to change anything and say things that were false. But then finally after it came out that...
Don Lane's the mayor.
Yeah, that they were piling bikes up in a warehouse and not even distributing them and then ending up giving them to us by accident anyway. Then finally they've set up a meeting with us, and through a process of some delays and canceled meetings and et cetera, then finally, you know, in a couple meetings with assistant city manager.
Initial.
Yeah, who incidentally is married to Zach Friend, who worked for the police department for
and
many
years. Now one of our supervisors.
Yeah.
Sadly enough.
Yeah. So, She admitted at the second meeting, orally but never in writing, that Bike Dojo was selling bikes in a way inconsistent with city code, that they are not a nonprofit, nor are they having any formal legal relationship with a nonprofit, although they do work with some nonprofits, but they're not sponsored for officially. And she also admitted, what was the other, our main contention? Oh, that she said that they were supposed to have been inviting other groups, and she also admitted that they hadn't done that at all. So basically, she admitted they were failing to administer the program well, but she was saying, she was not open to the idea that they would have an open process of deciding who would partner with the city.
How long had she known about this? That's the question they asked Nixon, you know, in the old days, the president who was impeached and resigned. You know, when did you learn about this? And was Tina asked how long she's known all this has been going on?
Well, what she was presenting as if she had been investigating it over the few weeks since her first meeting, and that she didn't have prior knowledge of it, and it's not... Again, I don't feel like we're in a position to be pushing about when did you know and that. She'll say what she wants, and how am I going to prove her any different? I don't know. But the
emails, perhaps? The hidden in private accounts?
Maybe. But at this point, the bike church is what we're pushing for is which Tina Shul seemed amenable to is reestablishing a program that's open to all nonprofits in the city, but we're also advocating that there should be transparency in the process of why the city's working with who they're working with, what happens to the bikes. Particularly, you know, they shouldn't be sold except under very limited circumstances, which is bikes that are complete junk that couldn't otherwise be used if it's required to put a lot of time and parts into it. It can be sold just to recoup that, but that's not what was happening, which she even admitted. And so that's another thing. Like before, we're not going to sign off on it unless we have some transparency in the process. And so far, we've kind of been waiting to hear back and haven't heard anything about that.
Now, Micah Bosner, who has actually won an election to the city council and was previously Führer of People Power, or certainly on the board of directors or whatever.
He was the director.
Mm-hmm. Apparently has been sensitive about raising these issues during the election campaign. What do you make of that?
I don't have any particular
comment on that one.
Yeah.
Are you yourself sensitive about commenting on this issue?
No, Micah, he's a politician. If you can't go get in a fight every day about everything, he's going to be outnumbered 6-1 on a lot of issues on the council. So,
outnumbered on the council, but would he be outnumbered in the population, the community?
I'm not sure. It's hard. I wonder sometimes, why is our council so poor? Is it reflective of just the people who vote, or people don't know what they're voting about? I don't know. But in any case, I think it's, I expect Micah to be actually follow through on being an advocate for the things he's been working on for years on council. But it's also, when you're going to lose 6-1, probably it's not worth taking every fight, and putting it on the agenda. But we'll see what happens.
We've been talking with
Steve Schnarr.
And Steve, has there been any change in the bike situation? Are you now getting bikes here at the bike church as you were before from the SCPD or via Watsonville's, I guess?
No, that was just a one-time thing. Then the guy from the Bike Dojo got real mad about it, that we ended up with some of them. So the whole thing is on hold. I don't really have any information. After Thanksgiving, we'll start pushing again and see if we don't, because the claim was we were all going to have a meeting and go forward with the process that once again is open to all nonprofits. But, it's been some weeks again, and I haven't heard anything back, so we'll see.
So, in essence, we will wait until after Turkey Day to go after the rest of the turkeys.
Yes, and the bureaucracy slowly grinds on.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you for being a person who raised his voice even at the risk of being slapped down by his colleagues.
I'm not easily intimidated by those kind of things.
Even by guys with tape recorders who interrupt you at every turn?
No problem, Robert. See you.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, I'm talking to a vet who apparently has gotten indoors. Thank you. How long did it take you to get indoors?
It took me 9 months going every week to the VA housing meetings until they got more vouchers, and then I believe they got the vouchers because of the Iraqi vets, and they had to lump in the old Vietnam era vets.
into the program.
Now, your name is?
My name is John Kenneth Timms, and I'm currently just went to Sam Farr's office because I have several claims with the VA, like the Hep C they gave me and the five surgeries I've had on my ear, which they say they're not responsible, but that's why I went to Sam Farr, so I guess now's time to hire an attorney.
So how much money did you end up putting out on for these surgeries?
The surgeries for VA care. You see, we have like socialized medicine when you're a veteran.
Right.
And that's how come I'm so surprised about America being so unwilling to have a type of socialized medicine, because I think it's great being in the VA with medical care, you know.
But you don't get to choose your doctor.
Hell, you can. Who gets to choose their doctors? If you're not happy with your doctor, you can go to a patient advocate and change it. So what? You don't get to choose a doctor. How well do you know your doctor? For God's sakes, lucky to have fucking care.
I hear you. So, how long were you on the streets?
Oh, about 8 years. Nine, I guess, here in Santa Cruz. But me and my brother had the best camping spots around. People said we couldn't do it. We had a gazebo over there on the levee behind there. Hell, we actually lived one time above the Goodwill over there, a tent for about 9 months. They caught us on the roof.
Wow, so you were squatters as well as camper.
Well, they said when I was in the military, I just want to get back because we're born here. We're fifth generation Californians. My grandfather's a farmer from Salinas. Well, they said I was homeless. Well, I was houseless because when I was in the military, I couldn't wait to get home. And you can't take my home away by, you know, saying I don't have a house. It's still the same damn bay and shit. My friends are still here.
How has the situation changed in Santa Cruz in the last decade or two? Any comments on that?
We have a hell of a lot less benches. They've taken out for the public. And they've also used First Alarm to be a police force.
And you, of course, are listening to a vet. Now you get to listen to, I don't think you're a vet, are you, Steve Plage?
Vet?
Are you a vet, or are you just...
I'm a veteran of the Thanksgiving Day meals in Santa Cruz.
Indeed. You spent your time letting in a pitiful number of 350 people to a meal that originally was serving four times that amount, right?
Actually, we probably went over 400, maybe 450 or something. So, yeah, a little bit more than we thought.
Uh-huh. So were all those hungry people outside looking wistfully in, seeking food, or would they just not show up?
Apparently they just didn't show up because we were able to feed everybody who got there. And, in fact, there was even some leftovers for people to take some things home. So it worked out pretty well.
You didn't save a plate for me, did you?
We could have. We saved a plate for Becky Johnson and David Mittensilva.
Yeah, well, that's very good. I commend you. So, Steve, on this Thanksgiving, you've been around now for what? Half a dozen? How many years have you actually been around in Santa Cruz on Thanksgiving?
Oh, really? Only actively the last three or four.
Do you notice any difference this year from the previous 4 years, or is it all kind of blurred together?
Well, I don't really notice any difference in the number of people who need a good meal and don't have anywhere to go. I think that's been pretty consistent. They tell me that over the years, the Vets Hall used to feed, 1,000 to 1,500 people. And we kind of picked up that 2010, 2011. We had, about those numbers. This year, there were a couple of other places apparently that were having some meals. So I talked to our good friend Dreamcatcher, who was on kind of a tour of the free meals the last two or three days. He was able to catch a meal at the Salvation Army on Laurel. He said it was very good. And then a couple of other places. There are some meals available, but not just the large traditional Thanksgiving meals.
Yeah, that was kind of not just a meal at the Vets Hall, and then to some extent at the Civic when you did it there last year and the year before. It was a kind of a community gathering as well.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what we wanted it to be, and I think that's what the Vets had intended to be for years, and we kind of picked up as much of the tradition as the event, and we thought we were successful in kind of giving the opportunity for people under these circumstances, particularly homeless people, to kind of feel welcome for one day, to have somebody serve them, to have people really, you know, want to have them there and do something nice for them, at least that one day a year. And, you know, now we have to work on the other 364.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'm always rather sarcastic about these once or twice a year charity efforts that make me think, you know, great, big deal. But, you know, it is a nice thing to happen. I would usually show up sometimes in a bathrobe, sometimes with flyers, sometimes, you know, giving information about court cases that we were fighting and trying to, you know, push forward. I hate to ask this, since I'm sure the news media showed up because it's in the Sentinel. Did Don Lane and Monica Martinez have some nice photo opportunities?
No, Monica was not there at all, and I think Don is usually away on Thanksgiving. Even with the Friends of Thanksgiving meals the last 2 years, he has been away to visit relatives and whatnot. So it's basically just Megan Carlson, Mike Kittredge, and myself were the main people in the kind of committee. But all the cooking was done by the staff there at Homeless Services Center, and we had lots and lots of volunteers. Really, kudos should go to Isaac, the Lyrical Eye, who was kind of the volunteer coordinator for the day. He worked his butt off all day long, and he really did a terrific job.
This is the felonious marijuana smoker who is being...
Allegedly.
Yes, dragged into court by the authorities.
But, yeah, he did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a good event, I think, you know. People seemed to really enjoy the meal, and they enjoyed the opportunity to kind of... be served by the staff there, which is how it was formatted. You know, people actually went in and sat down, and their meals were served to them along with their bread and desserts and beverages and whatnot. So, it wasn't the Civic, but it wasn't bad.
So, in other words, this is like the twice a year deal, maybe once a year in this case, but maybe twice a year. Christmas, sometimes another occasion when this happens, or has happened in the past, where normally twice a day people get a meal there on weekdays if they stand in line cafeteria style, get some food, and then sit down. Here, they were served by waiters with coats and ties and white tails.
Yeah, well,
and top
hats, sans the coats and ties, but of course they were fully clothed, of course.
Fully clothed.
You know,
yes.
Actually, Dennis Adams, who unfortunately wasn't able to help us out this year, he and I, the last couple of years, have done dinners over at the Homeless Services Center in that style on most of the major holidays. We've done Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. So we try to get all the big holidays over there. So at least, you know, that's a half a dozen days a year. You know, people will be able to come and feel special and get a really good meal. So, like I say, you know, that still leaves the, you know, 359 others. So, yeah.
So are you saying that on Easter and 4th of July, the Civic was the site of meals? I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, no. We did all those at the Homeless Services Center.
Ah, at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Homeless Lack of Services Center tonight, there are repeated rides going up to the Armory for, they staggered every half hour or some such thing? Or
every 20 minutes, because the van that goes up there only holds 25, and I think they say that their capacity is 100. I think I was talking to you about that today, where they put mats on the floor up there, and a friend of mine who's staying up there thinks that the capacity is probably closer to 125 if they wanted to, you know, put people in there at a little closer quarters. But, yeah, they start at 5 o'clock and leave every 20 minutes. So, in fact, when I left this afternoon at 3:30 or 4 o'clock, there were people already kind of getting in line to go up to the Armory and spend the night.
Hmm. Well, Steve Plaich, you can be reached for legal services, for advisory services around legal issues, though you don't have all the credentials of a full-fledged ambulance chaser, if you will. And that's at 466-6078?
That is the number. Always available.
You'll, of course, be wandering in front of Joe's Pizza right after the show, so you can panhandle a little money to buy me a drink, perhaps.
Well, actually, Joe's is not open because of the Thanksgiving Day holiday. Nothing's open downtown.
That's true. Nothing. I think the Santa Cruz Diner is probably the last refuge of the Thanksgivingless.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Well, I may wander down in that direction and see if you're around. If not, happy trails to you.
All right.
I'll
be talking to you soon.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye. And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides this Thanksgiving Day, or I should say National Turkey Day. Gobble, gobble.
I probably should talk about the history of Thanksgiving. It's so sort of shrouded in myth. Most people don't know the true story, but not this time. So I'm going to actually, again, apologize to those who were trying to hear free radio earlier and heard nothing. I really have nothing to apologize for. It's not been my task to put on shows earlier today, but I have put on some stuff for the rest of the evening and the night. And coming up next will be a replay of an older Thanksgiving with Uncle Dennis from the Cream of the Dregs. He is not in town, so you won't be hearing him tonight, but you'll be hearing a recording of him, or perhaps a recording of his show taken over by someone else. It's always a little unclear, but it will become clear very soon. I'll be back on Thursday evening with another 6 to 8 show, unless, of course, I head for Mexico and the Happy Hunting Ground. I can't leave the country. I think yes. The Santa Cruz 11 are still coming up for trial. So for those interested in that case, I'll try to give you any new information other than the fact that we're all being dragged back into court on phony charges around the attempt to repress the Occupy movement, where they're using us as the kind of stalking horses and straw men to frighten the rest of the community, I think, is what we're talking about. Anyway, we'll talk more about that. Wednesday is HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, meets at the Sub Rosa Cafe, and I'll be talking about that. Also, of course, I'll be back on Sunday. I was jumping ahead to next Thursday, but there is a show on Sunday, usually starting at 9:30 in the morning and going till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. There also is a Tuesday City Council meeting coming up, which I'll be talking about on Sunday, probably. That's the meeting where we exchange one bad mayor for a worse mayor. Don Lane will probably he will be gone as mayor. It'll be rotated to probably Hillary Bryant, who has distinguished herself by refusing to provide any meaningful information about her emails, her role in the Bike Dojo scandal, and various other matters I've asked her questions about, and I'm not getting straight answers from, but hope to as time goes on. Sometimes the pitiless glare of publicity can be helpful. Anyway, enjoy, and we'll be talking to you again. If you want to reach me off air, it's 423-HUF, 423-4833. And please do, if you got something you want to talk about, I'll try and talk to you about it. And can't guarantee a lot of time, but at least a little.
Good evening and welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Dennis and welcome to a special Thanksgiving version of From the Cream to the Dregs. No, I won't be in the studio tonight. I'll be with my family and friends. But if you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, I want to present you with this special show. So stay tuned for the next 3 hours. Let's start off with the Dixie Dregs.